This is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Susti, on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peace Works Independent Community Radio. Okay, there's been an update on the rent strike here in Eugene. The owner has invoked their guest policy, and so one of the tenants has left the property, and two more have joined the strike, and they've started a tenants union. They're on the way to starting a tenants union for the property and ultimately for the city of Eugene. All right, and then did a piece a few weeks back. There was a workshop on a BIPOC workshop that was canceled. So you'll hear the interview I did on that. And then last week, Rob Tobias of Train of Thought did a great piece with Lou Schneider on the Screen Actor Guild's Writers Guild strike, which we support all strikes here. Why would you want someone to make less money? So that's coming up. I've started a campaign to, and you'll hear, I'm doing several pieces and a series on sustainability certificates. If you go to Weyerhaeuser Sustainability, do a search for Weyerhaeuser Sustainability, Weyerhaeuser/sustainability, you'll see, go to their 10 reasons why they clear cut, and you'll see that it is not sustainable by any stretch of the imagination, by even the most lax green standards. So Home Depot uses Weyerhaeuser wood, their labor practices are atrocious, and they support Cop City, so there's a boycott, and so I'm standing out in front of the Delta Oaks intersection there every Wednesday at 5 to protest Home Depot's selling of your future. They're basically selling trees that are harvested unsustainably there, and we want a moratorium on clear cutting and more selective logging, and then move to alternative technologies like Bill Condi, local Bill Condi of Condi Lumber, had a plan to you can make building materials out of hemp, and you could restore the deserts while you're doing it and leave the trees in the ground to create habitat. So that's all coming up here on Talk is Cheap on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peace Works Independent Community Radio. Checking out a new theme song here too, which I don't know whether I'm going to use a theme song or not. But there'll be some fun, always some fun music at the end of the show. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, support independent media.
Today, actually, on Zoom, because the church that was hosting the in-person workshop, Trinity United Methodist, received a threat via messenger that the individual was going to come back with as many people as they could find and shame everyone into oblivion. The workshop was bias interrupted, and it was being presented by transponder trainers. Transponder works specific specifically with trans individuals in the community, as well as other queer folks. And one of they do a series of trainings, and we're doing their basic package, which includes the Bias Interrupted and Allyship, and then Gender 101, which we've already completed. Yes, how to be a better neighbor, specifically, and just learn some of the unconscious biases that we all hold so that we can be aware of them as we interact with our neighbors and help others to be aware of them also. Very ironic. So they accuse the church of being a pedophile because one of the biases towards the transgender community is that they are pedophiles, and so they accuse the church of supporting pedophilia and committing pedophilia, and they were going to come try to shame the church out of it, whoever attended the workshop, based on bias. So we rescheduled it on Zoom, and the decision was made to do that in community and consultation with those who were most affected by the threat. And that includes the trainers. This was coming off of the incidents in Douglas County at Douglas County Pride, where a group of protesters pushed through the barricades into a Pride celebration with headsets and chest cameras and very large signs, one of which had a graphic of a dismembered baby because they've connected abortion with LGBTQ. And they stood there yelling for several hours. That was July 1st at the Douglas County Pride Celebration. People who were going to be involved in the training had been there and were still feeling the effects of being threatened by that training, and just the national rhetoric around the country has heightened the trauma in the LGBTQ community.
So I don't know how to ask this, but so I noticed that the more you are exposed to people that are different than you, the more accepting you are.
Proximity and sharing story, especially being willing to hold space together with someone we don't necessarily identify with as far as background and the way we do life, is extremely valuable if you are in a position to learn and are willing to sit in community and learn. Putting a group that is hostile with people who have been traumatized by similar situations is not productive or healing. No, I love the "What would Jesus do?" Question, because something that I've heard from several members in the LGBT community that have faced this kind of hostility is that this has nothing to do with Jesus. This is not Jesus-like. Jesus never approached any marginalized group with aggression and hostility. Jesus is two primary messages, were love God and love your neighbor. And on this hangs everything else. Everything else you do leads back to loving God and loving your neighbor. And the aggression, the threats that are being made in the name of religion have nothing to do with Jesus. Something that we do within the belonging space and connection with Pride. I'm also the faith and spirituality coordinator for Pride this year. Is try to hold these spaces where we can learn and hear each other's stories in community. And that's what Jesus did. If we read through the Gospels, he sat down with people and they talked and they told stories. And they learned about each other and they did life together. These threats are not life-giving and they have nothing to do with Jesus.
Well, and I'm the only one saying this, but I notice in the New Testament, the only ones that are being punished in the New Testament are the rich people. There is no punishment in the New Testament. That Jesus is not about punishing people at all.
No, Jesus confronted people who used their wealth for exploitation. And it was a huge challenge that Jesus made to people who were wealthy is what is that wealth for? It goes back to the community, and if you've exploited people gaining your wealth, it needs to go back to them. Jesus confronted religious leaders that were exploiting power, and this is really what we're seeing, what we saw in Douglas County. They were a religious group that came in. It's what we see in rhetoric around the United States, that religion and power are being combined, and that wasn't what Jesus did. Judas kind of got angry about that. If we read through the Gospels, he was a zealot and he wanted Jesus to get involved in politics and throw down Rome, and that's not what Jesus was about. We don't conflate religion and politics. We do life.
All right, anything else?
I don't think so, other than to invite folks to support the various trainings, workshops, and events leading up to Pride, and to join us on August 12th in celebration of this year. It's the first year we will have a faith and spirituality zone. And we're really excited about it. It's an ecumenical space. We have various churches participating that don't necessarily share denominational beliefs, but everyone agrees on the rule of love, and we want to hold a kind, compassionate, celebratory space for folks who want to engage spiritual life at Pride.
All right, thanks very much for your time. Stay safe, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
KEPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. You've been listening to the eWeb public comment on modular nuclear reactors that eWeb is considering against overwhelming opposition from the public. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends.
Hello and welcome to Train of Thought. My name is Rob Tobias. Today, my guest is Lou Schneider, who is part of the Writers Guild of America, I do believe. And there are went out on strike for the first time since 2007, 2008. And Lou is here to talk a little bit about what's going on. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I guess maybe a good place to start would be a little bit of background. I know you said you got into comedy and you did some acting, but in more recent years, you have been a writer for network television, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I did start as an actor. In fact, my first union was SAG, and because I still act from time to time, I'm a member of SAG-AFTRA, which is the Screen Actors Guild of America, and it's a merged union with the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. So that's SAG-AFTRA. we are also in strike in SAG-AFTRA. So I'm walking the picket lines. I don't know if it means twice as fast, twice as long. I actually have a two-sided sign that I flip around. So yeah, I'm out on the picket line in two unions.
And so both actors and writers are on the same picket line?
Mm-hmm. We are. The locations are the same. I don't think the actors are in as many locations, even though there are more of them. I think they see the benefit of skipping a couple of places, especially as the summer gets hotter and the conditions get harder. I think they get more bang for their buck and bigger numbers if they consolidate their efforts. And I think we're going to do that too as time wears on.
Yeah. But you've been out a little bit longer. The writers have been out a little bit longer.
Yeah. It was funny to watch the actors come out. We'd already been on strike 73 days or something like that. Who's counting? But 73 days. And to see the actors come out with the spring in their step and their bright eyes.
Yeah.
Their hopeful smile. And one of my crusty old writer friends jerks a thumb in my direction and says, look at the freshmen. But it's good. Today, a very good showing by, we had a particularly vocal group of actors on the line today, and they were really chanting it up, which I've been on strike in New York because we were traveling, and I saw, there's a picket in New York. So I went over there and picketed, and then because we were visiting a kid in New York. And then when we got back, I noticed the stark differences between the LA and the New York pickets. In New York, there's a fair amount. First of all, the police have you sort of penned in what, you know, there's sort of the same barriers you see on TV and like, you know, when they do a crowd thing in New Year's for New Year's in Times Square, there's sort of those bicycle rack looking temporary fences.
Yeah.
And so they've got the writers penned in those things. And everybody's just kind of, you know, there's some aggressive milling about, but the writers are walking in a pretty short circumscribed area. And there's a fair amount of chanting. There's someone with a bullhorn. There's someone reading from a list of chants from a piece of paper. And in LA, it's not the same, really. In LA, there's way, you know, you're trying to get people. You love when people honk at you and support, but you'll be walking, you're holding your sign, and then you start talking about, you know, I've never eaten there for brunch. I know that they have a breakfast, and then someone will honk and you kind of shake your sign at them like, yeah, thanks, buddy. And then you go back to, yeah, no, but it's this, you know, that chef trained at Ludo and he's really good. And then it immediately beep, beep, beep. Yeah, yeah, I know. Yes, yes, yes. Bite the pound. Yes. And so it's very casual and much more kibitzing in LA than in New York. In New York, it's a real labor action. In LA, it's a sustained chat.
I see. More like a Curb Your Enthusiasm rather than a Seinfeld. I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know.
Give me one of the chants. I just want to know what are they chanting?
Okay. This is sort of standard fare. Kind of things like fist up, pens down. LA is a union town, or New York is a union town. There's also what do we want? Contract. When do we own it? Now, which really applies for labor everywhere. So that goes pretty well. In New York, it went so well with some of those early chants that they got a little aggressive and it all fell apart. This one guy who was leading the chants, I don't know if he's officially a union employee or he's just another writer out there with the rest of us, but he says, what do we want? Fair deal. When do we want it? Now. And it did pretty well, got some momentum. And then he went to the next chant. What do we want? A better definition of residuals in foreign markets. Once he got that, too wordy. As writers, we're all looking for edits. No, too wordy.
Yeah.
No, it didn't work.
doesn't rhyme. Yeah. Yeah.
Doesn't rhyme. The rhyming ones can be a bit silly. There was a, you say AI, I say bye-bye. And I had to bow out. I actually changed gates. I went and picketed at a gate where the chants were better.
That's
I left.
Well, tell me about the locations. Where who exactly are you picketing?
I've picketed in a number of different locations in LA. I did a lot of work at Sony over the last 10 years. And so I'm pretty used to driving to Culver City, which is where Sony is located. So I've picketed at Sony and I've picketed at Amazon. Amazon is kind of, I actually like the gate. I like that there are sort of two gates that you pick it. The walk is not wholly unpleasant. There's a lot of good traffic that comes by, so they give you a lot of support. People beep at you in support. A lovely woman the very first day came out of her house and said, "Do you need anything?" And I said, "Yeah, I need for people to stop using Amazon." And she says, "I don't use Amazon very much." And I said, "Could you tell 140 million people?" And then she offered me, you know, she said, "You know, if you guys need a bathroom or a cup of coffee or something, you know, feel free to come by." I haven't seen her since, but she was very nice. And so I feel like the public has been really supportive in this one in ways that they were not necessarily in the last one. So it's been encouraging to this point, but it's going to get longer and we'll see how we do.
Let's get down a little bit to what we're striking about. By the way, I'm speaking with Lou Schneider, who was a writer on Everybody Loves Raymond and also on The Goldbergs. Is that right?
And a few other shows.
So I know we're in a new era. It's like a new model is presenting, and that's part of why we're on, the strike is happening. But tell me about how you used to get paid. Like, what was the model where you got writers got paid for doing the production, but then there was residual? What was the old model?
Well, you're exactly right, Rob. What used to happen is you made a certain amount for the script you wrote, with in the same way that an author who writes a book, based on this, you know, if you get a certain advance for the manuscript. And then if the book sells a certain number of units, you expect to, you know, it's been negotiated that you will then see residual earnings on that manuscript. It's the same way with TV. We used to write, you'd write a draft of a script. And then as the show reran with each additional use of the show, you would then receive additional payment. It didn't always stay the same. In other words, it would start at a certain level for a network primetime rerun, and then it would drop. And there are people at the Guild, at the Writers Guild, who keep track of how many times your shows have aired, and you got paid accordingly. With streaming, it, first of all, in 08 and 07, that 07-08 strike was about getting a definition for use and for pay in streaming. In other words, what do you pay someone for a script written for a streaming service, because that wasn't part of the original agreement. You know, TV changed. So, of course, the company said, "Oh no, we don't know what that is. So just keep writing and, you know, we'll figure it out." And we just said, no, we wanted, let's define the percentages now. And if you make, because they said, "Oh, we don't know what the money is going to be." We said, "Well, we don't either. So when we figure it out, we'll get a percentage. We'll come to an agreement as to what that'll be." So they did that. But between then, 07 and 08, and now the business has changed so markedly that we know, well, they're telling their shareholders, these publicly held companies, that they are making whatever in profits, but our money has stayed the same. And so according to our old philosophy, which is still a workable philosophy, if you're making more money, we want to share in that profit. And that is where the strike arises.
But didn't you negotiate a percentage what you were making? A percentage? So why would it stay the same? Shouldn't it go, the percentage, if it's more, shouldn't it have gone up?
It should, but what they're doing now is they are saying we don't know that it's going up, but they do say that they know, because they're telling their stockholders that it's
right. Yeah.
So you can't have both ways. You can't say you're losing money to us and say there's no money for you, and then tell your stockholders and your yacht builders. I mean, these are you know, these are CEOs who are making money. You know, they've got yachts worth more than the cost of the settlement that the Guild wants. So it's a little bit out of whack. And that's not just the Writers Guild. That's another part of this strike, is that this is a strike way more about labor as a whole in this country. I mean, it's about the writers' problem, but it is, I think that's why there's public support for this in ways that there haven't been, because now the average writer makes think less than $38,000 a year. I mean, there's usually a second job involved. I don't know. Don't quote me on that. I know the average actor, 80% of the Actors Guild makes under $26,000 a year. So you have to have another job.
Right.
So it's really rough. But the people showing these shows the production companies and the studios, they're showing profits, and we just want our share of that. In the same way that people own hotels and people who, you know, who run hotels, teachers, transportation workers, everybody needs to keep pace with the cost of living, and it's just not happening.
So it's not just syndication. I mean, it's something like Everybody Loves Raymond. It's probably on a streaming service, right?
It is. It's on. It's hidden behind a paywall now, but it's on Peacock.
What does that mean, hidden behind a paywall?
Well, in other words, it's not. If you just get I think you have to pay for Peacock. I don't think, or it's bundled in with something. It's not a free cable system. Like if you just get a cable system, a cable TV subscription will come with it. I think you have to, and it might even be. Behind a paywall might even mean, I think this is the case, you don't get it with the standard Peacock. There's an extraordinarily great Peacock, I guess, that costs a little extra. It's a
Peacock,
so that's
plus.
The paywall.
Peacock
yes,
plus.
There's even more Peacock, so they have to pay that. So that's where that is. But the Goldbergs is on in syndication, but that model is really shrinking. But yeah, I mean, I worked on these dinosaur shows where these were network sitcoms that ran 22 episodes or more a year. But that's not the model anymore. My son wants to be a writer, and he's facing, you know, short orders and, you know, shows that may only do 8 or 10 a year and show no residuals. And, you know, who knows? Like that's not a way to make a living.
Well, when you say show no residuals, does it depend on the success of the show, whether it's going to continue?
That's a great question, and I don't always know the answer, but in some cases they say, oh, no, we didn't pick up a second season of that show, so it didn't do well. So you got paid for your first script, but really not that many people watched it. And we know there are ways to track that. They know how many people watch their shows, and we want to know that as well.
I mean, this show business has always been unfair, I would think, you know. I mean, isn't there? It's always been trying to catch up with the moguls, and this is just a new step.
Yes, and this is, I mean, to be philosophical about it, I was listening to one of the heads of the negotiating committee on a podcast, and he was saying he didn't seem, I mean, I really like this guy, and he really seemed measured about it. He said, they always do this. This is part of the push and pull of negotiation. They will right. always try to tell you work is worth nothing. And then they will eventually tell you, we can't wait to be in partnership with this great creative group, you know? So,
yeah.
So it just goes.
But what is new is AI. That, and I know that's one of the issues, right? I mean, it's like we've had automation come into different industries. It's kind of a version of that, but it's pretty wild that
this is an order of magnitude different in that they really would love to have a computer in a room with a person, and the computer spits out the script, and the person just sort of smooths it over and makes it sound like a human said it. I will say this, they open themselves up, I think, into some serious legal jeopardy, because the AI can only work off, you know, previously published or aired material. So that is owned by somebody. So
if it starts to look too much like Wizard of Oz, then you can say, hey, wait a second.
Right.
You're just research. Yeah. I mean, people do that anyway, but they hide it well.
Right. That's right. You're right.
You know,
If you watch these shows, that someone's going to put in every season of Friends, you know, and you know they'll feed all those scripts in, and then there's going to be a way to change all the character names, and you'll go, this isn't a story about, you know, Chandler and Joey or whoever whatever those characters' names. This is a story about, you know, Dwayne and Arnold and Mary, and then there'll be an argument.
Yeah.
So. That's the other part.
I saw one good quote. It says, streaming has been called the invasive species of the scripting world, throttling the competition and harmful to the ecosystem if unregulated.
Yeah.
You know.
Did I write that? Who wrote that? That's good.
I don't know. I picked it up on one article that was online.
Yeah.
What's the mood out there? Are people hopeful?
You know, it's funny. I think it, yes, I, well, I think they are resolute. But I think they're resolute, and I think they are more hopeful now that there are two unions striking. I think it was always easier to think of the writers as just malcontents and ne'er-do-wells and crazy. But now that you have all these other malcontents and ne'er-do-wells and crazies out there, there's a little more oomph in this. I will say, as a parent, you know, you're not supposed to start any important discussions with your children if they're hungry or tired. And I think the mood really depends on, like today, some kind soul had paid for flatbread to be made near the picket, like sort of near the check-in tables for the picket. So people, I think the mood was great because the flatbreads were delicious and everyone seemed to be enthusiastic and happy and nourished and hydrated. And so right. I thought today was an excellent day. And yesterday when we got by on a bag of, on a couple of, they had like those orange snack crackers, not so great. Yesterday's mood, not so great.
And have you been to, I assume it's a true story, the one about the cutting of the trees or trimming trees back.
You know what? I had been.
For people that don't know, I'll just say the story. Sphere is that the picket line were being, you know, people in the picket line were being, had some shade near the studio, and the studio actually had these trees trimmed way back so the shade would disappear and they'd be more uncomfortable out there. True or not true?
I did think, well, it turns out it is true. And I, listen, maybe I'm not such a conspiracy person that I go, oh, I don't bet they did it. I'm always like, well, it's just probably bad time. It turns out it was terrible time because that is in fact what happened. And I wouldn't have known that it was so deliberate if they hadn't then provided shade and water after the cutting of the trees. They took such flack for it that they actually, first of all, they paid a fine, a nominal fine. And then they now had provided shade and water. I don't know how long that's happening for, but it, clearly they lost some sort of PR battle there. Because I know studios, they would have said, no, it had nothing to do with that. And we're cutting these trees. It was scheduled to happen anyway. Now they realized how bad it looked and they came over with water and shade. So I believe it is true.
Yeah. Tell me about the writer's room. You know, I just watched the marvelous Mrs. Maisel. You know, they had depicted the, you know, 60s writer's room. But and isn't one of the issues about like cutting the number of people in the writer's room? And what the dynamic there?
I don't know how you win that one, because I've been in, I really feel like that's a tough thing to mandate. I do think you need to guarantee that there are enough people retained from pre-production through production. I've been on shows where, and this was not for a streamer, but it was for a cable show where it was on TNT, where as the season progressed, we got rid of writers along the way. And by the end, it was only me and one other writer and the two guys who were the executive producers running the show. And we had a lot to do. What you want to make sure, I mean, we don't mind a lot to do, but it was a little dicey. You want to make sure you have enough people to finish the show and get, because you're not just writing. When you're a writer, you're in on coming up with, you may be writing your script. You may also be working on breaking stories, which means coming up with the stories for subsequent episodes. And then you may also be responsible for going into editing and working on shows that are in post-production. So it's not simply, what people would think of just someone at a computer typing all day long. There's a lot of other stuff that goes on and you need to have enough coverage for that. And so I think that, you know, as the business has contracted, they've squeezed the writers on that. And I think there needs to be some sort of, depending on the show, there needs to be some sort of minimum for writers' rooms. I don't know what that is. And it would depend, to me, it depends on the show.
Post-production, I wouldn't think many editors would want a writer looking over their shoulder, but that's...
Well, it's more, the editor really does it, but then sometimes if you're a trusted hand on the show, you'll say, oh, you know what, we can... Because sometimes an editor is just cutting according to the script. Uh-huh. But then if you're a writer and you say, we've kind of made that point in scene A, I don't think we have to make it again in scene C. let's cut A and only do it in C. You know what I mean? It's like, so it really gets to me. And an editor is sometimes an editor is so trusted that an editor can go ahead and make that change. But sometimes an editor is going to need a writer who is intimately involved in the script to say, sometimes the editor is the one who shows you that. He'll say, look what happens here. Or he or she will say, look what happens here. Do you think we need both of these things? And the dumb writer, me, will say, oh, you know, you're right. Never thought of it. Yes. The point is made. The acting was so good that we don't need to see this twice. We need to see this once. And that's where it really gets going.
And do you also negotiate whether you get to be paid to be on set or not, you know, while the production is going on?
On the Goldbergs, I was the guy on set. After day three or four, most of my time, I would say all of my time, was really on set. And eventually I became a director on that show. And that came about because I knew some of the actors pretty well, and they felt comfortable having me make changes on the fly. So there was something that wasn't working. Sometimes I would call upstairs and say, you know, we're having this problem with the script. Or sometimes I was able to go, you know what, we can make this easier. Let me change this. And so that's where a writer on set is really valuable. And you want them to be guaranteed a writer on set. That's probably another part of this negotiation.
Yeah.
So, you know, there, all these things are in play. I'm sure this is not super interesting for people who are not in show business.
I mean, it's interesting to me, but maybe we're just having a chat. I like hearing about it. I mean, what people are interested in is getting their shows back on, or, you know, having the having Colbert back on the air, and, you know, all these things that we're missing out. And maybe it's just short time right now, but this could go for a while. I mean, what is how long is it going to go for?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's the you know, $372 million question. I'm watching these people. You know, you start to watch ancillary businesses. You know, there are people who cater these shows. You know, when cast and crews are on lots, you know, they have to eat somewhere, and there's that whole business. And what about the people who sell food to those caterers? What about, you know, small businesses all around town? I'm thinking not just of restaurants, but grocery stores. You know, people just don't have the money. They're now there's a chain of groceries. I don't think it's a chain. There's a supermarket in town now that is taking, if you have your Writers Guild card, they will, they'll allow you to, it's like a food pantry. They'll allow you to fill your grocery cart. They'd like a $55 donation. They would also like people to do 4 hours of volunteer time in, you know, working there, but they will look past that. And so a lot of writers have stepped up. I heard from SAG, I just heard this on NPR, that Dwayne The Rock Johnson made a seven-figure donation to SAG today for a strike fund to help actors who are having a tough.
Right. There's something called Entertainment Community Fund that I saw.
Yeah. I've contributed to that as well, but I sure didn't give seven figures.
Yeah. and then there's all other people that aren't writers, you know, makeup and set design.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Everybody and all, that's, you know, involved.
Well, I work on sets. And so I have a friend who's a camera assistant, which is the guy who focuses camera. And he is, at first he was mad at the writers. He said, why aren't the writers going back to work? You know, our contract's not good and we go to work. And my answer to him was, you should be on strike. Don't blame the writers. This is the writers are the tip of the spear here. Like there's a labor and wages problem in this country. And we're all getting hosed. You have to stick up for yourself. And I think they do see that. And their union is doing that as well. IATSE is going to go out probably at some point.
Uh-huh. And are there people that cross the picket line? Are there people that are working? Or
I haven't seen a single person do it. There's no way to do it. There's nothing to go to.
Right.
There's nothing happening. This is also a time of year where there wouldn't be anything happening. Now, I have heard that SAG has given some productions waivers, which means they've allowed them to shoot. Most of them, I think, are overseas. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's a great gesture of goodwill on their part, saying, well, you know what? We had these crews in place over there and there were visa problems, you know, getting everybody in and getting equipment there, and to pull the rug out from under us is an undue hardship and you're only hurting yourself. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know enough about it to be clear, but But yeah. I hear there are waivers. I hear SAG has given some waivers, but I don't know the specifics.
My guest today has been Lou Schneider on Train of Thought. Thank you so much. Is there something I haven't asked? That I should have asked?
No, just support your local laborer.
Yeah.
Be they a writer or anything else. People need to feed their families.
And UPS. I mean, there's a...
And UPS looks like they averted their strike. So.
Oh, did they? Yeah.
It looks like they will not strike. Their rank and file is going to vote, but I'm happy for them, really happy for those guys.
All right. Well, thanks. All right, thanks for spending some time with me. I appreciate
it. Thanks. Sure. Be well.
Thanks again to Lou Schneider for spending some time and talking about this strike that's going on. We're talking about the streaming revenue and the AI. There's some big issues that are involved. And companies like Amazon, Apple, and Netflix are part of this discussion. And I think they didn't used to be. Anyway, I appreciate you listening into my conversation with Lou, and I will have a new show for you down the line. You're listening to Train of Thought. Train of Thought can be heard on KEPW 97.3 in Eugene. It's also posted on soundcloud.com/RobTobias. For comments and suggestions, email rob@robtobias.com.